Hello everybody, it's George from Ireland, so welcome back to the channel. Talking about the Russo-Ukrainian conflict. My goodness, how long has it been going on for now? Over 2 years and 4 months, you know, or almost 2.5 years. Remember the two-day war? And, you know, it's well into its third year now, going to last well into 2025. Surprisingly, Zelensky changed his tune lately. He previously said negotiations shall open, we will only have a parley with Russia once Russia is withdrawn from the whole of Ukraine, and that includes Crimea, which Russia seized way back in 2014. But he now said, well, not necessarily, we don't have to have these preconditions. I was a bit surprised by that because I don't think Ukraine's military situation is deteriorated much recently. If anything, it's got a bit better in the last month. But looking at war casualties, and these are mounting from Russia. There was a fascinating study published by two Russian opposition media outlets, Mediazona and Meduza. Meduza meaning like, what's it called? That thing in the sea that can really sting you. It's not stingray. It's jellyfish. That's it. But like the ancient Greek Medusa, the hag who could turn you to stone. But anyway, they had to be based in Latvia, Lithuania, because they go to prison for telling the truth about the war, even calling it a war, even though that word slipped out of Putin's mouth once. But they, on the 5th of July, they published a study showing that there are around 120,000 Russian war deaths in this. But they said there was their corridor of certainty is between 106,000 and 140,000. Now, that doesn't include troops from Russian-occupied Ukraine, because there were men in Crimea, Kherson, Zaporizhia, Donetsk and Lugansk, ethnically Russian, linguistically Russian or whatever, or even if not, but who joined the Russian army willingly, in some cases unwillingly, but some of them genuinely embraced Russia and really wanted to be part of Russia, but it excludes those men. So the real Russian war losses are much higher. So in that 106,000, 140,000, middle of the range, about 120,000 war deaths. And we reckon that for everyone killed, about three wounded. Now, there's obviously a spectrum of wounded. It could be one drop of blood, to triple amputee or something like that. Some of the wounded quite minor and be back on the battlefield very soon. Others, they are hors de combat permanently. It's unclear if this includes foreigners who are serving in the Russian army or indeed mercenary units like Redut, formerly the Wagner private military company. There are a few others. So prison recruits over 20% of the deaths. Some of the deaths, they weren't able to break it down and say, this person was in the Marines, this person's in artillery, this person was in the FSB or whatever, because the Federal Služba Bezopasnosti, the Federal Security Service, they do actually have armed units which actually fight. Others there are really as intelligence officers who happen to get killed in a drone strike or something like that. But there's a serious percentage of troops that Mediazona and Meduza weren't able to say which sort of unit this person was in. So Mediazona thinks that up to 250 soldiers are killed each day now, whereas this time last year it's more like 120. The increased death toll is partly because Russia's on the offensive. They're coming out of the trenches, moving forward, getting killed. Whereas a year before they were sitting there defending, obviously not completely safe defending, you can be hit by drones, artillery, or whatever. So Russia is making these intense efforts to capture territory, but that's at the cost of very high casualties. Now, Putin is willing to pay that cost, the lives of his men and very occasionally women. So the Russian army is at about 95% male. So that's lower than most armies. Higher than most armies, lower female percentage than most armies these days. So because Ukraine received these modern Western weapons in mid-2024, Russia's suffering higher losses than before. These weapons have got a longer range, more accurate, bigger blast radius, and so forth. And of course, there's yet more to come. You know, the F-16s, whatever, the latest package from the United Kingdom announced, I mean, not just like ammunition for small arms, but various missiles, various armored personnel carriers, infantry fighting vehicles, boats, things like that. Maybe think, is there a big river crossing in the offing? I thought it a little bit unwise to announce the boats, therefore. But anyway, in early 2023, Russia was making strenuous efforts to take Bakhmut, and Wagner Group under Yevgeny Prigozhin was doing so. Now, they eventually succeeded in seizing that city in East Ukraine, but it's estimated that at least 16,000 people were killed in doing that. Now, they are mostly Russians, but they're also Belarusians, Serbians occasionally, Tajiks, Uzbeks, Kurgan's men, you know, people from the poverty-stricken former Soviet republics in Central Asia, they sometimes joined, they sometimes volunteer, they're duped, or they're told that they'll get citizenship fast track, which takes 10 years, is very expensive for them. And for them, you know, Russia was a colonial metropole for centuries, and Russia offers a better life than in the tyrannies they often live in. Kyrgyzstan's not that bad, but Uzbekistan is pretty bad. Turkmenistan is the worst of the lot, but I've not heard of any Turkmens joining. Occasionally, even Azerbaijanis or Georgians joining the Russian side, but that's unusual. They're much more likely to join the Ukrainian side. And Russia, because they're having to draft more of their own men, this is unpopular, and particularly drafting their indigenous ethnic minorities, over 200 indigenous ethnic groups in Russia, like the Buryats are particularly likely to be conscripted in the Russian Far East. So Putin says, well, if they do get killed, at least not ethnic Russians, ethnic minority guys like from Dagestanis and Chechens and stuff like that. There are obviously some Chechens on the other side of the Ukrainian side fighting for freedom. So this is a problem for Russia, and these losses are unsustainable. It's not crisis level yet by any means, but think about it. So Russia's got about 140 million people, about 70 million males, about 35 million military age males. But of those military age males, a lot of them got exemptions because of the FSB or a shortage of occupation, or they're disabled, or just they're well connected and can bribe their way out of it. So if you're a well-heeled Muscovite or someone from St. Petersburg, you're not going to be conscripted. If you're poor, if you're from a remote region, if you're an ethnic minority, you're much more likely to be conscripted. War is a racket. Well, some people have made a lot of money out of it in Russia and abroad. These military manufacturing companies, General Ivanov in Russia said to be incredibly corrupt and an evil man in many ways. Well, my Russian's not that good, actually. Is Ivanov, he did at least say that his men, come on, they've got to have some leave. These guys have been fighting for 2.5 years, often in the front line all the time. No R&R. That's grossly unjust. Well, some people are living it up at home. They got the money, they got food, they live at home, they have sleep in a warm, dry bed, have a hot bath whenever they want, go out to parties and nightclubs, they're with their women, they go on holiday whenever they want. And the war doesn't impact them at all. And that's grossly unjust. Other guys getting killed and you're not suffering at all. You're not doing your bit. But anyway, so coming back to this, so to try and take the pressure off Russia playing the blood price, let's say they're making great efforts to recruit in countries in Africa, like Burkina Faso, the Central African Republic, anywhere, the meat grinder, as they call it. But, you know, they've scraped the prisons and they've largely, anyone who could be used from prison is largely gone. Anyone who's remotely physically fit, they've used them already. Some of them have been killed, severely wounded. Some of them done over 6 months have been set free. And this was grossly unjust. Someone is serving a sentence for murder, survived six months in Ukraine and is free. And he is in a more advantageous position than someone who volunteered and is still fighting there 2.5 years later. But a lot of the prison recruits were rushed through basic training, giving shoddy equipment, inadequate clothing, minimal rations, and just sent forward in meat attacks to draw enemy fire or as a diversion for the real attack for the professional troops. Because Wagner Group, when it was still going, had some guys who were veterans of the Russian army, been in for at least 10 years, really knew what they're doing, highly motivated and trained, and as well as people they thought was complete runts, and they're willing to throw away their lives. But they won't do that with their professionals. Anyway, so in late 2023, the war slowed down for Russia. It has succeeded in fending off the Ukrainian counteroffensive, and that's why Russian casualties dropped markedly. So in early 2024, BBC and Mediazona proved that at least 58,000 Russians were killed in the war. This is not an estimate, it's proof, 58,000. And these were deaths of men who were declared to have been soldiers killed in combat from various open sources. So Russia's also recruited Indians, Nepalese, Cubans. The Indians and Nepalese often tricked, told they have some military support role, like loading or unloading trucks or digging trenches. But no. They are forced into military training, sent into combat. Some have been killed and so on. And Narendra Modi visited Moscow. And I'm surprised he didn't say, I'm only doing that if you release these guys. And he didn't do it. Why? They obviously seem to be feeble. It might be because the important relationship with Russia is important, partly to counterbalance China, and he doesn't want the Russians and the Chinese getting too cozy, because, you know, China is almost an enemy of Russia and is the biggest trade partner, donor to Pakistan, of course, is India's deadly enemy. So about 34 Russian soldiers per day are charged with absent without leave, but that's not a lot for an army of over 1 million soldiers. Now, Ukraine and Russia, they still refuse to publish their findings. So these losses are a big problem for Russia. But, you know, working out is it's, we reckon it's like over half a million over 2.5 years. So that's about 200,000 a year. But bear in mind, about 600,000 boys turn 18 every single year. So you can more than replace them with people simply turning 18. But as I say, some of those 600,000 will be exempt for medical reasons or whatever, go into a shortage profession, like being an electrician or something like that, or just be too rich and well connected. But nevertheless, that would leave like quite easily 500,000. So these are losses they can sustain. They don't have to recruit every young man, because that would cause public opposition to grow too much. Yeah. Yeah, everyone thought it was going to spatter at them, but finish in a week. I thought they'd take Kyiv within 2 weeks. I thought, you know, it was something like 10 weeks, they get to the Dnipro and maybe stop there. But I think Putin's obviously seeing that the cost is too high. He just can't do this. And they've not taken Kharkiv. They're going forward. They're crawling forward at a snail's pace. They will crow about, you know, managing to take a bus shelter. And Ukraine's even taken back some territory. So it's not easy for Ukraine, but there's certainly no breakthrough from Russia. If they did get them, they wouldn't be able to exploit it. They lost so many tanks and so on. They can't replace these assets at the rate that they're exploited. But that's what they're destroyed. But that's what they're concentrating on, hammering Ukrainian cities. There they can achieve some success. But it actually does not that much to turn the tide of the war. If they use all those missiles and drones and so on the front line against the Ukrainian military, that might change the war a bit more and drive the Ukrainians back. So the war is pretty horrific. I was reflecting today just how lucky I am to be out of it. I'm so glad I'm here and not there. Got to count my lucky stars. You know, that could be me. I know a Ukrainian young man in London, and he's not going back. And then, well, surely his duty is there. But I can't judge him. If I put myself in his place, I don't want to get killed. I don't want to be wounded. I don't want to be taken prisoner and tortured. Even if none of that happens, I don't want to see it happen to my friends. I don't want to see the rotting, charred corpses of the enemy. And I don't want to be freezing in a trench, soaked to the skin, stinking, not having washed for weeks, my fingernails clogged with dirt, eating some cold, horrid rations, or eating nothing for a few days because the truck due to bring it got blown up, and my nerves shredded by the shrill whine of shells coming in. Does this one have my name on it? I don't want all that horror. And so he's just trying to stay alive. So on a human level, well, can't blame him, really. Obviously, that's our program. Somebody's got to fight the war. I'm very glad it's not me. I wish there were a better way, but unfortunately, Putin can't be reasoned with. He will only genuinely make peace if he has to make peace, if he's defeated and he thinks that he can't fight on. Anyway, thank you so much for watching my channel. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon, donate to PayPal, georgecallahan79@gmail.com. Goodbye.